How's it going? This is Scott Fish. I co-host a podcast called the Commission Impossible Podcast with Ryan McDowell. We don't exactly go over player values or dynasty trades or potential or rankings or mock drafts, and we usually don't even have guests. We just like to talk about commissioner stuff, so that's what you get. You can learn about lots of different scoring systems, interesting rules, settings, how to set up your playoffs, how to determine draft order, how to determine rookie auction values, things like that. Stuff that commissioners might be interested in, like rivalries or rolling bankrolls or salary caps. We also answer commissioner questions. So if you're interested in that kind of thing, check us out. It's a pretty good listen.
Check my inbox and what do I see? Just another day, another T-R-A-D-E. I'm an addict, and I need it in my veins. I'm an addict, otherwise I feel plain now. Every day I wake up, people got a problem. Making all these trades up, got me singing got them. But I've been paid up, I even started from the bottom. See, I don't wait up, I ain't even playing possum. So what it cost, I'm just a couple of firsts. Can't believe that it worked, not to say I'm a jerk. But I'm an addict, it's what I said in the first. You can curse all you want, you can pray in your church, but I'ma keep tapping return. I win up, I learn. I ain't trying to burn any bridges. I yearn for the feeling I earn. All my winners to turn. You had a cheek before I drop you like the beat. I'm an addict, and I'm not really ashamed. I'm an addict. I'm reclining with the brain. I'm an addict, and the pot is what I'm playing. I'm an addict. Russ and Brian are the names. Trade Addicts Pod. Let's go.
I am Dynasty Outhouse, and I have a trading problem.
And I'm Meatloaf Wildcat, and I also have a trading problem.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Trade Addicts Podcast, session 103 of the Trade Addicts Podcast, a member of the DLF family of podcasts. We are off to a rocky start, but this is going to be a rockin' good episode because I saw Trolls World Tour, and I'm not going to... No spoilers, I promise.
No spoilers.
No spoilers. It was good. There were some ridiculously trippy moments. Like I'm sitting watching this with someone who has done ridiculous hardcore drugs, and she's like, whoa, this is weirding me out. That's how you know it's bad. But it was funny. It was good. The music was a lot. But it was... The kids will love it. That is what is important.
Perfect.
Yeah, the first one was way better.
Yeah.
But the important, not important at all whatsoever, but the weird thing that happened was I tweet out that I saw Trolls World Tour. It was good. Whatever. The kids liked it. All of a sudden, a lot of people started being like, I don't know what it is with sequels these days, like Trolls 2 and Frozen 2 were bad. I'm like, whoa,
no.
Slow down. Yeah, slow your roll. Like, where is this Frozen 2 dislike coming from? I have not seen that yet. I think we're just trying... People are trying to group things together and trying to, like, justify they don't like Trolls 2 because sequels are bad. No. Frozen 2 is freaking awesome. Back off.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I might have liked it better. I really might have. I think I liked it better.
It's tough. Like, you ever see the Hellboy movies?
I have not seen them all. I saw
not the
first new,
the Ron Perlman, the first and second.
Yes.
The ones from the early thousands, not the one with, I don't even remember, the dude from Stranger Things. Hellboy 1 was awesome. It was so much fun. It was great. It was so rewatchable. Hellboy 2 was a fantastic movie, but I liked Hellboy 1 better. I don't know if that's a exact like meeting with how I feel about Frozen, because Frozen 2 might be such a good movie, it's just better than Frozen 1. But I think that's really what it is. Frozen 1 is more fun. It's more like, because the way I talked about the music was Frozen 1 is straight up karaoke. All of it. Every single song.
Yep.
So it's a lot more fun to go along with. Frozen 2 is a fantastic movie, but there's real emotions in it. Unlike Frozen 1, the closest thing you get to real emotion is Let It Go. And it's just like, all right, you know.
Whatever. The thing that I like about Frozen 2 is it's not a sequel that like, you know how a lot of times the character development happens in the first movie and you get to the end of the movie and then the sequel isn't, there's not more character development. It's just like they're rehashing the same stuff.
Yeah.
Frozen 2 wasn't like that at all. Like the character arcs went to a whole nother level of like Anna and Elsa reaching their destinies. Right. So like it was like the complete story of Frozen and those two sisters isn't completed if they don't make the second movie. Like the second movie is just as important to the whole story, maybe more so than the first. I mean, the first one is the foundation. It sets up, you know, so that you understand some of the stuff that's happening in the second movie. But the second movie's the one that kind of like takes you to the end, per se.
So it's like Frozen A and Frozen B, not Frozen 1 and Frozen 2.
Correct.
It's like 1A, 1B.
Correct. Correct.
There you go.
Yep. Yeah. And the music, I mean, and like you said, I mean, the original Frozen is absolutely karaoke. Like you can sing every word to every song, probably. Yep. Well, even people that casually watch the movie can probably sing some of the songs. Frozen 2 was like they hit every genre of music possible. You know, it was, but it was great. I mean, all the music was really powerful and moving. Like you said, kind of the emotion, you know, of the music was really good. So, yeah, I liked both. I really liked the second one. I watched the second one first without my daughter, and
yeah, we talked about that. Yeah,
and it was, I enjoyed watching that movie like without her. Like it wasn't her enjoyment of the movie that made it good for me. It was like this movie's pretty damn good. Movie.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's pretty much, I was going to ask, how was your Easter weekend, by the way, if you actually got to do anything fun with the kiddo, because, I mean, we threw some eggs in the backyard, and then we had a indoor, like, we threw a blanket on the floor and had a pizza picnic and watched Trolls, so I was going to ask how your Easter weekend was, if you had any fun for it.
Yeah, we did. We did an egg hunt in the backyard as well. We dropped some flowers off on front porches for family members and whatnot.
That's cute.
Yeah. So, she got her basket on Sunday morning there, and we did church, of course, and then ate really well. We had big Easter dinner. My wife was a cooking machine. And we had turkey and not ham right now because somebody's got to watch sodium a little bit. So
you got to watch what you're feeding that 2-year old, man.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Blood pressure's through the roof already.
Exactly. yeah. So but we had a great dinner. Good quality family time. Just hanging out. And it was nice here on Sunday for the most part. So the outside stuff in the middle of the afternoon was really fun. It was good. The Easter egg hunt was good. And yeah, no, it was good. It was a good weekend.
Cool. Yeah. Now my segue, have you ever seen the movie Analyze This with Billy Crystal and Robert De Niro?
No.
Billy Crystal's the therapist. All right. Well, clearly you need to see it because
I should.
Yes.
So I'm a therapist.
Yes. At one point they try and make Billy Crystal, who is in real life and in the movie, just ridiculously Jewish, try and speak a little Italian. And I can't remember what they try and get him to say, but he just goes, "Hey, Easter weekend." And that's all I think about every single Easter. "Hey, Easter weekend." And that is the only reason I brought up how was your Easter, because I wanted to talk about Analyze This.
Nice.
And I knew from the beginning that you just wouldn't have seen that movie, and that I'd have to tell you that you should absolutely go see that movie. Don't see the sequel because it was awful, but the first one was really good.
Yeah. Good to know. Good to know. I appreciate it.
Not with your daughter.
Yeah. Gotcha.
All right. Well, that was our little BSing session. So let's just go to the news.
The news.
Christian McCaffrey got paid. That's how many A's and I's I made Brian put on the show sheet. Yes. This man, he got what Lev Bell wanted like 2 years ago. Like, that's pretty much what happened. He got, we both completely forgot the full numbers, but it's 4 years, 16 mil per year.
Yep.
I think we knew from the beginning that the Steelers would not do that for Lev Bell. I think we knew from the beginning the Panthers were going to do this for Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah.
Like that dude is their offense and they do not feel ashamed about it. 4 years is kind of surprising. Like maybe it's what they had to do. There's probably an out after three because that dude, well, he doesn't get hurt, even though he does. Man, does he take a punishing? Because that he touches the ball 600 times a game.
Yeah. Yeah, over 400 last year. Over 400 touches last year. So
now it's tough for the value of the 101 to change, but does this change anything? Like, should people feel safer in any way because he got that extension? Does it matter in any way, shape, or form? Because to me it honestly doesn't.
No, I don't think it does either. I mean, yeah, well, so I mean, first of all, did you really think he was going anywhere?
No.
I mean, he might have played on a franchise tag or something for a year or two.
Yeah, but that would have affected his value because that not knowing what next year is. I mean, Derrick Henry would probably be worth more than he is now if he actually got a 2-3 year deal.
Right.
So playing on the tag does kind of hurt. I mean, for Christian McCaffrey, would probably drop him to the 104 instead of the 101. And that's only for people that take contracts too seriously. But like to me, this is whatever. Okay. If he was your 101, this doesn't change anything. And if he was your 102 and then you took him 101, whatever. I think there's so little mattering in the top that it doesn't matter. That was terrible sentencing. And that is not a real way to use that word. good for you, Christian McCaffrey. I guess that's really what it comes down to. You know, it's nice to see that a running back got paid. It sucks that you have to be an entire offense to get paid. I was really hoping something would change in the CBA, but it doesn't look like it's going to for them.
Yeah. It's deserved. You know, yes. It's deserved. It's well deserved. We'll see. Panthers are thinking. I mean, I think that's the thing that people are wondering. Are they going to be happy with this contract 4 years from now or 3 years from now? You know, I mean, running backs on their second contract, it's a thing, right? Especially people hate running backs on their second contract. You know, Ezekiel Elliott's not even 25 years old yet. And people are like, oh, he's getting up there. Like, you know, just because he's on a second contract. Like I think it's an overreaction at times. Mm-hmm. But I also understand it because the track record of these guys when they get paid on their second contracts, they typically, I mean, Thomas Jones is like the only running back to produce in his upper 20s at an elite level. So, and that's from way back. So, So, I mean, you know, I think we'll just have to see. We'll have to see. I mean, it doesn't do anything for me as far as his dynasty value right now goes. I mean, he's still solidly in the top, you know, three picks, I think, in you know, super flex dynasty startups, top two picks in regular dynasty startups. So,
oh, why? Who was that other pick in the regular 1QB startup?
Saquon Barkley.
Yeah. I was going to bring up, which I let you say his name first.
Yeah.
This is going to be interesting going forward for coming up Dalvin Cook and then coming up after that Saquon, because, I mean, this is groundwork for what paying a running back that is the focal point of your offense is going to be. And Dalvin Cook clearly is that. And Saquon, well, there's more.
Saquon's going to get $20 million a year.
Yeah, he's probably going to have to by then because, you know, Cook's going to end up getting more than CMC. So it's just going to go up a little more. So this is definitely going to be interesting. This definitely paves a road. I don't know if it's a good road or a bad road for running backs, but a running back got paid and that means something.
Especially, I mean, he's getting paid, and don't make it a mistake here. I mean, this is the argument that Le'Veon Bell was making, that he was more than just a running back. He was a running back and one of the best in the league, but he was also, you know, better than a lot of teams' wide receiver ones, you know, I mean, as a receiver. So, and that's what Christian McCaffrey is getting paid for. He's getting paid for essentially playing two positions, even though he's only playing one, but he's doing, you know, he's a very versatile player, and that's why he got the contract he did.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that was our only news, which, I mean, at this point in the offseason, no news is usually a good thing. Actually, no. I want to talk a second about Dak and Zeke being complete and utter idiots and having a party breaking the law for grouping together of people during the quarantine. The second that article dropped, I got an offer. Someone trying to sell me Zeke, like I didn't just see what happened. Does this worry you about, I know you're Mr. Risk Averse, like you probably weren't going near Zeke in the first place anyway, and while there's punishment or not for this, does this scare you away even more from Zeke, and does this give you a concern about Dak?
Not really. I mean, look, a couple things. First of all, it's, yes, it's obviously extremely stupid. I mean, we all know that Ezekiel Elliott is not the brightest, you know, he's not the sharpest tool in the shed, as far as handling his business. You know, Dak is a little surprising to me, but at the same, look, I don't think this changes anything. Though they're not going to get disciplined for this. The NFL is not even taking this thing seriously. They're having their draft. I mean, if they were taking it seriously, I understand they moved it to a virtual thing. And for look, I'm just like everybody else. I'm glad they're freaking doing it because I am sick and tired of sitting at home with no sports, being bored on my ass. It sucks. And I'm absolutely thrilled that the draft is going to happen. At the same time, it was scheduled to. Having said that, if the NFL was really taking this ultra seriously, they would do the same thing that these other leagues have done, and they would have rescheduled it. They would have rescheduled the draft. So, you know,
no other sports are in full swing off season though. Is there any other sport that now?
Doesn't that make it even worse though? Like they don't have to do this right now. There's nothing. They haven't changed their league year. Probably not. They're going to do it and they're going to get through it. So as long as the league or of the teams, right? So the players, okay? It sends the message that, look, this is a very serious thing that we have to make sure we're taking the proper steps to make sure that everybody's safe. I'm not saying that the NFL is not doing that, but nothing has changed for them. So in the players' minds, if nothing is changing in terms of the league year and in terms of, the only thing that's changed is they can't get into the facilities, right? So outside of that, nothing has changed. So does that send a message to somebody like Zeke who doesn't comprehend messages very well? That's very harsh. His judgment is questionable. That's fair. I think that's fair to say. His judgment is questionable. So if he's looking at this and he's like, well, Goodell's, the NFL's making their money. They're going to have the draft. They're going to, they had free agency on time. They did this. Does it send the message? Well, yeah, this is serious, but it's not that serious. As long as you have people over to your house instead of going to the club or going to dinner or going to wherever you're going. You know, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not blaming the league for this either. I mean, I want to make sure that's understood. I'm not blaming the league. Dak and Zeke made bad choice here. I mean, I don't think, and especially it's the optics of this thing are horrible too, right? I mean, we're all sitting at home in our, whatever, 800 square foot homes to, 2,500 square foot homes, whatever. And they're sitting in a 17,000 square foot home with a pool and a bowling alley and a movie theater and every amenity that you can possibly have, and you can't just do what the rest of us are doing for once in your entire life. I mean, you live a privileged life now. You might not have, and you might have worked really hard to get what you have now, but you have a mansion. You can sit in your mansion for a few days, right? A few weeks. If I can do it, you can do it. So, it's horrible optics. It really is. It doesn't change their dynasty values for me. But it's bad optics.
Oh, man, do I want a movie theater and a bowling alley in my house.
That would be the best bowler ever. I would just bowl like every day.
I did bowling leagues on Saturdays through, I think, at least through middle school. I think I did like freshman year of high school. Then I ended up being too lazy to go. That was
great fun. Sport. Great sport.
Of course, I like give it up right before people start drinking. And that's what adults do when they go bowling. You go bowling so you can go drink.
Sure.
All right. So let's go to, it's really a sort of a main event. We're going to call it that. But I just really want to talk about a draft I'm in the middle of.
Main event.
So I started a league. And I know I said I wasn't going to start a league. This is not a Trade Addicts league. So just please don't yell at me.
Back off.
Seriously. The name of the league is even, it's definitely not a new league. because I asked people if they want to join a league. They're like, dude, I can't join a new league. I'm like, no, look, this is definitely not a new league. It is low money. It's like $25 to get in. But the reason I did this is because I wanted to be in a league where you did the rookie draft before the NFL draft. I've been hearing one or two people talking about it a lot, and I did one startup like 2-3 years ago where the rookies were involved, and it was a ton of fun. But like, I wanted to do this, and I wanted to get some of my home league people into a league with you people, you know, Twitter people, podcast people, people that actually know what they're doing and what they're talking about. So the reason I bring this up is because I have been talking for the past year almost about how everyone wants to trade back. What do you do in a draft? You trade back, you trade back, you trade back. But the problem is when everyone wants to trade back, nobody's trading back. We are in the middle of the 8th round. I have traded back, not even just done trades. I've traded back 15 times. Like, I decided since this is a low money league, it is, you know, filled with a bunch of people I like, I am going to have fun. I'm going to do something I have never done before. And I did not make my first pick till technically the 308, which is insane. I've never done that before. I don't even know if I've ever really fully traded out of the first round before. And I started with the 102. Like, that's how far back I traded. And it's just been so much fun. And the thing is, the way I was always saying it was, trading up was such a great idea these days because everyone wants to trade back so much, you get good value to trade up. But the truth really is, there are so many tiers right now that are gigantic to me that it just doesn't matter. I made my first pick at the 302 and I picked DJ Moore. First of all, you can get DJ Moore at the 302 of a super flex league. But the second I drafted him, I traded him away. I drafted him. Someone goes, oh, dude, that was going to be my next pick. So I'm like, all right, you want him? So, you know, I traded back another 5 spots, got a little on top. My first pick was the 308, and I picked Tua Tagovailoa only because I'll call him my friend in air quotes, super duper flex, grab Joe Burrow right in front of me. I wanted Burrow and Tua so bad. And I was playing with fire every trade back, but I couldn't help myself. I just kept doing it. And one pick before I was ready to take Burrow, and I had a pick 3 picks later, so I really had a good chance of getting both of them. One pick, he takes Burrow. Not the only time he sniped me in this draft also. So I did not make a pick until the 308. I want to read you what my team looks like. And I am trying to go very youth with this team. My team right now, Jared Goff, Daniel Jones, Tua, Michael Gallup, Kenny Galladay, Justin Jefferson, CeeDee Lamb, Cortland Sutton.
I like that a lot.
I love this team. Now, I get it. This is me. I don't like running backs, and a lot of people do. That's fine. But let me tell you something. Kerryon Johnson, David Montgomery, Lev Bell, Marlon Mack, James Conner, Darius Geis, Chris Carson, Philip Lindsay, Kareem Hunt, Raheem Mostert, Damian Williams, Mark Ingram. All these guys are still on the board. With wide receivers I have, especially if the young guys, like if Jefferson and CeeDee Lamb hit right away, and I just, you know, if Damian Williams can stay healthy and do half of what he did at the end of last year, the playoffs, I mean, I may accidentally have a playoff team already. And you know what else? I have 4 21 firsts and 3 21 seconds. My goal of this draft was to get Tua and Burrow, which I failed at, to get at least CeeDee Lamb, if not Lamb and Judy, and to get 5 21 firsts because I wanted with all of my soul to have Burrow, Tua, Fields, Lawrence, CeeDee, Judy, Rashad Bateman, Jamar Chase, and Rondell Moore. That would have made me the happiest boy in the world. I may have quit every other fantasy league if I made this. So I guess it's a good thing it didn't happen.
Yeah, I'll say it's a good thing just because I'm in a bunch of leagues with you. So,
hey, man, you'd have to start running a bunch of leagues because...
yeah, man, I mean, I love that. I mean, that's what you want when you're trading back. I mean, that's the type of team that you want. What I'm surprised about is that you are able to get the value. Because we have talked about that a number of times about, you know, how everybody wants to move back. So typically people don't pay to come forward. So the fact that, you know, and look, you're getting that value. If you weren't getting that value, you wouldn't have the team that you have with all of those picks. So, I mean, that's the thing I think that is surprising for me. But good on you, man. I mean, that's a heck of a, you know, the cool thing about it is, like you said, there's a decent possibility that that team competes right away. And because they're so young, even if they don't, I mean, next year, year after, I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not like those. And here's the other thing. You have an arsenal that if you start contending this year because CD hits and Jefferson hits and
bye-bye Galladay, bye-bye Goff.
Well, or but you have four firsts from next year.
Yeah, just jump
you
and can, compete.
You can yeah. use, yeah, you can use to acquire
I'm
other
gonna
assets.
I'm going to do everything within my patient powers to not do that.
It's
I don't know
be
if
hard.
I can, but I'm going to try just because, again, I want those guys in their rookie draft.
Yeah.
I still need one more first.
That's awesome, man. That's a hell of a team.
Yeah, it's so much fun because it's just something I want to do. And like you said, the value must be there. And the thing is, before now, if this wasn't a $25 league, if this wasn't with a bunch of people I really like, if this was like even maybe if this was just a regular, if it was a trade X league, I'd probably do it too. Because, you know, it's still low money and it's all a bunch of fun. But like, this isn't something I would normally do. And now that I'm doing this, it might be something I normally do. Like, it's funny. Like, I'm always on the opposite side of this where I felt like I was getting a good deal to move up all of these times. That just might be what the value is now.
Right.
Because it's not a fancy trick to trade down anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, for a while, it's like when Zero RB first came around, everyone was sneaky about it. Everyone thought they were brilliant. And then all of a sudden, everyone's like, oh, yeah, no, wide receivers mean something. So I'm going to start valuing wide receivers. And all of a sudden, it didn't work anymore. Because
right.
everyone was drafting wide receivers, so you weren't getting value there. I think that's what started to happen. And so we may have, I don't know if it's at a medium yet, but it must be because I find good value with trading up and trading down. And I'm not saying me specifically because I'm so good or anything. It's just, it's what I've found both in offers I've made and offers I've received. Very rarely when I sent an offer, had anyone been like, yo, that's crazy. Except for once or twice where I would spam the entire league and just start clicking buttons. And you know me, it's just when I just keep clicking buttons, bad things are going to happen. Thankfully, they haven't been bad in my direction.
You're going to ship Mike Evans for a second.
It was for Marcus Mariota. Leave me alone.
Exactly. Exactly.
Is he even worth a second anymore?
No.
Why'd you have to bring that up? That hurt my feelings.
I'm sorry. Apologies.
No, but I really just I wanted to talk about that because it's one of the few things that I wanted to. It's one of the few opportunities that I actually took to do something I don't normally do to see how it goes. And the thing is, I love seeing studs on my team, but like, I think I still kind of have some, and I didn't pick until the third round. The thing is, I had three in the third, two in the fourth, two in the fifth. And the thing is, I just kept moving back. I've had three in every round, but at least one per round I've moved back. And I at a certain point, maybe I'll start trading up because like once you start hitting the teens, it doesn't really matter anymore. So I think we've already in like the eighth round entered go get your guy territory where ADP is just sort of a little out the window as long as you're not like drafting Mitch Trubisky right now, RIP. but it's a lot. It's yeah, I underestimated or I did not realize how much fun it would be, which is weird for me not realizing how much fun trading would be.
Yeah. That's awesome. I mean, I'm not one who I've never done this. I've never done this the way that you've done it. I've seen a ton of people do it. I know. I mean, Ryan McDowell does this all the time. Yeah. You know, a lot of the respected names that are really, you know, a lot of the devy guys do this too because they know the younger talent really mm-hmm. well and get excited about those players. you know, I'm just, and look, I'm on record before. I'm not one who typically trades a ton in startups. I trade after startups a lot. I mean, obviously I'm a trade addict, right? So, I mean, I trade once I have my roster and I can evaluate my roster. I don't trade a lot during drafts. I'll make one trade, either a big jump up or a big jump back, to get a guy or to ahead of the draft, maybe to put me in position to get a guy that I want. But I'm not one that typically does this. I should try this sometime when I have some more money for more startups.
I think I cross my fingers that you hold out to try this until next year. How about that?
Yeah. It's hard. I have a really great league with some guys that I've been in. It was my very first super. I've talked about it on the show before. It was my very first super flex league, DLFS, and it's a bunch of guys from the DLF forums. And we've been, I think this is our fourth or fifth season maybe now that we're going into. And they are starting a Devi league. Literally the same guys. Like, it's the same guys, and they're starting a Devi league. And I'm like one of the only people. There's only like two out of the 12 guys that haven't agreed to join in, and I'm one of them so far. They've been pressing, and I've been holding on, but it's getting harder and harder every time they bring it up to be the only one in there, because that's a great group of dudes. But man, it's hard right now too with the quarantine stuff. It's hard not to jump right in there, but.
Yeah, but imagine if you get like all 12 guys, you could do one of those like combo leagues.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it could develop into, it could develop into something, bigger than just the two separate leagues. I mean, they could end up combining somehow. I don't know how that would happen, but those guys are smart enough; they could probably figure it out. So, but I like this, man. I mean, I I commend you for doing something that you're not, that you don't typically do. I think it's a great thing as a dynasty owner to, especially when you get into those leagues that are just are lower entry fees or are free leagues or whatever, to try different things so that you can know what it's like to do them and know what, like, I don't have the experience of really doing that, a team like that. So it freaks me the F out.
Yes.
To think about doing that. But, and it probably did you too. But, now that you have the experience of doing it and you've created a team that is like a slamming team, it's like, hey, well, yeah, this is another strategy I can apply to my rosters in startups, depending on which way the draft is going for me. So,
yeah. And also, I had to, show what's up to my home people that, like, yes, I have a podcast named Trade Addicts, and let me show you what that's all about. And to be fair, it has, like, them seeing so many people doing all of these trades made it easier for them to go along with it. Sure. Because they've seen people doing multiple trades, so you don't need to be afraid of one of them. Like, they've seen someone do a trade, we're like, oh, I wouldn't have accepted that. And then they trade right again after that. We're like, oh, okay, yes. It's funny, like, my home people, like, this dude's like my best friend, pretty much. And we had a group me chat for this new league, and he asked me why my name was Outhouse. Like, there is a huge split between real world and Twitter world, like, with me in fantasy football. Like, they forget I have a podcast. I'm just, So, like, they don't know my phrase of the only way to fix a bad trade is with another one. And I'm like, look, this is how I live my life of fantasy football. You are starting to understand that. Like, this, like, fills my heart with joy. Like, I'm very, very glad I decided to actually start this up. So, all you people out there, please don't yell at me. It's not a Trade Addicts League. Speaking of Trade Addicts League, let's do some Trade Addicts trades.
Trade Addicts trades!
Trade Addicts leagues are 12-team, super flex, PPR, tight end premium, 1.75 points per reception for them's tight ends, and 0.05 points for return yardage. First trade, Trade Addicts 3333. Hollywood Brown, Daryl Henderson, a 21-3rd for Leonard Fournette. What do you think about that, Brian?
Barf. That's
please
all.
Expand.
Barf. I don't like any. I don't really like any of the players in this deal. I think the value's fine. I mean, I think,
which is really what made me and Dustin laugh while doing this. Neither.
Yeah.
Did we.
I think the. Yeah. I mean, I think the value's fine. It's about right. If I was a Fournette owner, that's what I would want. If I was a, you know, if I was, you know, on the other side of that, I think I would consider paying that for him. So, you know, I think that's a good deal.
So when you say barf, you mean awesome trade, bro.
Yeah, exactly.
So we over the weekend had another TA3 meetup, Zoom, whatever you want to call it. And man, we got pretty much the entire league there at one point. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, we had 10 of 12, I think, this time.
Yeah. Well, of 13, because
I mean, oh yeah, Savi was there. That's right. Yep.
And it was there where I brought up both having Hollywood Brown and Daryl Henderson that I want to get off my team. And both times, Dustin was like, yeah, what the hell? I'll take him. Yeah. And the thing is, I just got Hollywood from him like 2 weeks ago. So he's like, I'll take him back. Sure. So I sent him Hollywood and Henderson for Fournette. In my head, I'm like, he's not going to take this. So it's just like, you asked for these guys, so I figured I'll send them to you. And he's like, it's close. So I'm like, is it? I'll throw a third. He's like, all right, why not? I'm like, yay! And honestly, nice. I don't love buying Fournette right now, to be honest. This is a one-year push thing. I thought for a second I was going to start rebuilding TA3 because I did the second chance dispersal, and usually you don't get a winning team out of a dispersal, but I traded for Travis Kelce for some reason. I think just because I got a good deal, and all of a sudden I'm like, well, I have Kelce. I should try and compete because Brian won't trade for him from me.
I was trying to get him about the same time you got him, so.
Yes.
And then the price went up significantly when you got him.
Yes, it did. So I figured I might as well try and win now a little bit. I don't disbelieve in Daryl Henderson, if that's a way to say the words that I'm trying to say. I don't think he's bad. I just don't think he's a workhorse. I don't think he's never down back. He's a role player. I think they're going to draft another running back, and I don't know what that backfield's going to look like. So if I'm looking to compete, I don't want that risk. Speaking of risk, Hollywood scares the hell out of me. I didn't want him in the first place. Just it was another trade with Dustin where it just the value made sense and we couldn't piece it together any other way. So I understand Hollywood can be good. And he was good when he was on the field. But him not being on the field was one of the things we were scared of. And while it was pretty much all related to that one foot injury, and yes, it always takes at least a year to recover from a foot injury, and I did not give that to him. And it's one of those things where I'm just fine being wrong. I think there is a good chance the Ravens bring in a wide receiver, and while that probably won't hurt Hollywood because it won't be the same type of receiver, and Hollywood seems to be a guy that cares more about efficiency than he does volume, again, not something I wanted to deal with on a team where I am sort of making that push for.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like I said, I think this deal value wise is good. I'm with you in not buying Fournette. I don't think he had a bad year last year. Yeah, exactly. He finds the end zone another couple of times, and it's a pretty darn good season. So, you know, and yeah, with Hollywood, I mean, I think he could potentially outperform his current value, but I think what you're going to have with Hollywood is you're going to have the inconsistency week to week. You know, he's going to have some weeks where he catches, you know, four passes for 130 yards and four. He's going to be Deshaun Jackson. Yeah. I mean, that's what I see, you know, he's to me, and I know he's kinfolk, but he's not AB to me. No. He's not that player. He's more of a, you know, straight line, and big play guy. Yeah. So, you know, if you can live with that, I mean, best ball, I love him.
He's like a bottom of your starting lineup. That's the word. Lineup kind of guy. That's great. Right. Yeah.
Flex spot.
If your team is strong enough, you could live with those bust weeks, but man, those boom weeks probably give you the win. Kind of like what Tyreek Hill was I keep going to say freshman year, but that's always wrong.
Rookie. Yeah.
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 All right, so that's enough about that one. Let's go into TA4. This one, I just wanted to bring up because it's just something I haven't seen. I saw it was a trade for Nick Foles, and that hasn't really happened yet. So it was Nick Foles for a 21 second and 21 third, which to me is pretty much spot on.
Yeah, I'd pay that for Foles all day.
Yeah, and honestly, I'd be fine selling Foles for that because we don't know who's starting. We don't know what leash the starter is going to have, and it's really a headache I don't want. Yeah. I own Foles in Trade Addicts too, and I kept trying to sell him to Mello, who is the Trubisky owner, and he just wasn't having it, pretty much. but if you are a middling team or if your team is very good and you just are unsure of your quarterback position, I think this is a good move to make. Mm-hmm. Or if you just happen to have Nick Foles on your team and you still have two or three starting quarterbacks, which is man, the wind is still crazy strong. Sorry. I could hear it through the freaking window. Foles is my fourth quarterback on my Trade Addicts 2 team. I mean, maybe I'd be willing to sell him for a second and third. So maybe I will just start offering out for everyone for some picks just instead of just trying to jump him on the Trubisky owner. So that's the only reason I really wanted to bring this up. It's a small trade, but it's something that I haven't really seen anyone talking about short of right when the signing happened or the trade happened. Everyone's like, oh, Foles. And everyone's like, oh, starting quarterback's worth the first. But we don't know that. This could be one of those motivation things. You know, who knows what Chicago's thinking? Because it wasn't the smartest move to trade up for Trubisky in the first place. And do you really give up on the guy after whatever? I mean, I know he's had some time, but regardless, that's not really what we're talking about. I thought this was something interesting in a year where there's a lot of question at quarterback, seeing what these maybe guys would go for. Because we did talk about that a little bit last show with Cam Newton. Mm-hmm. While this isn't the same thing at all, it's just another aspect that I wanted to talk about. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's move on to the next one. Our last one is from Trade Addicts 5. This one is Deebo Samuel and the 212 for Devin Singletary and Darius Slayton. I wanted to bring this up because this trade scared the hell out of me. Every player in this trade, I think, has the risk of having people drafted and hurting their value. And this is pretty much going to drag us into, man, we had so many questions about this. John Hare at Dereal Ethiopian, Two Drink, and Renshaw all asked questions about people that are going to get helped or hurt by the draft. So I figured I'd tie this all together. First, let's talk about this trade just because I don't know, man. Like, the person who made this trade came to me with it, and I just sort of shrugged my shoulders. I'm like, I love Deebo. I love the way they use Deebo. If they keep doing that the way they did, at least in the Super Bowl next year, he will always have value because they manufacture touches for him. Mm-hmm. So many mocks are showing them taking CeeDee or Judy or like a running back, a wide receiver in the first, especially now that they have two picks. Does that kill Deebo?
Nope.
No? Because, nope. I mean, we can't forget that Kittle's the number one wide receiver, and then they're bringing a real number one wide receiver there.
Yeah, but I mean, so here's the thing.
You still have the play count to manufacture the touches Deebo needs while feeding Kittle and, let's just say, CeeDee Lamb.
Well, I mean, Emmanuel Sanders was there last year, so they had a true wide receiver one once they traded for him. I mean, I understand. I mean, Manny Sanders at the end of his career versus CeeDee Lamb at the beginning of his, obviously, that's a different deal, but I don't know that Deebo is hurt. I mean, if you're putting Deebo against, you know, defensive backs that aren't the number one on the team, I think that's a good matchup for him. I think if he's working safeties and linebackers and number two corners and all of that, I mean, with Kittle running down the middle of the field, I mean, Deebo, I don't know that it necessarily hurts him. You know, his skill set is
everything ish.
Well, yeah, he's not
jack of all trades.
How do I say it? He's not an alpha there. Yeah. He's not an alpha. So if they bring an alpha in, he's not playing the alpha anyway. So I don't know that it necessarily hurts his value. I definitely am worried about Singletary. And look, I liked what I saw a lot
from
him last year. But I still think they draft a running back at some point. I don't know what, I don't know if it'll be high, but I still think they'll bring a running back.
It doesn't need to be high this year. That's even the scarier thing for him. Yeah. I did a John Bosch was running the mock on mock rookie draft. Yep. And what they do is they take a mock draft that some person who does mock drafts, like they just find one online. This one was through Sports Illustrated. And we do a Superflex rookie mock out based on that mock draft, like those landing spots. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire went to the Bills in the third. Like, that is bad for Singletary. Yeah,
absolutely.
Like, it's, like I don't know if that's the kind of player the Bills would take, because it's a little similar to Singletary. I mean, Singletary's a little stockier and such, but I think it would be smarter for them to take a guy who runs up the middle more. But still, they don't seem to want a workhorse.
Yeah.
And I don't think we're pricing Singletary at that anyway. That's not really what I'm trying to get at. But this year, they could wait till the third, fourth, and get a guy that would have taken real draft capital any other year, mm-hmm. which means it can hurt more, even though the draft capital doesn't show it as much. Mm-hmm. So I'm legitimately scared. The second I saw that the Bills were in deep talks with Melvin Gordon, I wanted Abbott on Singletary.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, because if, I mean, it, and look, Melvin Gordon is an excellent running back in the National Football League, so I don't want to discredit his work in the league for to this point at all, because I'm a big Gordon guy. But I mean, you know, you have to look at that and say, look, if they were comfortable with Singletary as their lead guy, they wouldn't have entertained paying Melvin Gordon the type of money and that it would have taken him to. You know, the rumor is he took less to go to Denver than he was being offered by Buffalo.
I saw that was debunked, that the Bills never made an official offer.
Okay, gotcha. Well, I mean, that was the rumor. So, yes. But regardless, even if it was a similar deal, right? And he chooses them. I mean, that's significant cap money. Yes. So they're not going to, you know, if they had full confidence in Singletary, they're not going to pay that type of money to another running back.
They're not going to be in deep talks with a.
Correct.
Big run. Correct.
And then the other part here is Slayton. And look, I love Slayton. And I think, I mean, obviously last year he was a monster for a stretch there. And really was their only reliable receiving weapon for a while. I mean, Evan Ingram was injured and Sterling Shepard was injured and Darius Slayton wasn't. And he reaped the benefits of that. Having said that, I think the Giants absolutely have to bring in a wide receiver. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a very deep class of wide receivers. And I think that, you know, they can get a really good player, you know, second, third, fourth round that would make a significant contribution, you know, in that offense. Now this year, it's a little bit different because of all this, you know, the corona and all that, but, you know, because rookies, we don't know what kind of impact they're going to make if they're not able to get into camps and learn offenses and, you know, work timing.
They have a new offense anyway, though.
They do. But work, you know, if they're not able to work timing and stuff and whatnot, yeah,
Slayton
that's going to be
the
tough
rapport
to do.
With dimes already. So that's,
right.
So that's absolutely a step up.
Right.
Which is why everyone thought he was doing so well in the first place.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, so, that's something.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this deal, I think this deal is okay value-wise. I think I would lean Debo side slightly just because I don't think that his value is quite... I don't think if they draft a player at the same position that his value just tanks the same way or has an impact the same way that it might on the two players on the other side. But okay, I think current value-wise, that's, you know...
I want to ask you this question in the opposite way. If the 49ers and the Bills don't draft a player at those positions, does it change their values? I don't think it changes Debo's. I think it skyrockets Singletary.
Yeah, I do too.
I mean, I'm too terrified to take that risk. I own one share of Singletary that I'll probably hold on to more because I can't move him more than because I want to hold on to it. But it might just be fun to see if that's one hell of a payoff. If anything, he's my running back too.
Right.
And if not, they don't draft a running back, I mean, knowing me, I'll sell him because just running back value, that's what I do with it. But like, yeah, like he will absolutely skyrocket to like probably like what, top 15-ish running back, just because he'll be one of the few workhorses.
Yeah, I would think so. Yep. Yeah. And he actually, the one thing that is crazy about Singletary too is last year he almost did better when he got more carry. Like if it felt like when he could get into the flow of a game, it's really when he kind of showed what he could do, you know, when he was,
yeah,
you know, later in the season there, when he was starting to get 15 to 20 touches a week, he was really putting up some numbers. So, you know, I think if that's the case, if they don't bring somebody in to compete and they are going to give him 15 to 20 touches a week, I think that's, I mean, yeah, I agree. I think his value would skyrocket in that case.
Yeah. In April, he is running back 21. I think, yeah, he'll easily jump up a couple of spots.
Yep.
Oh, good. I'm glad we had that talk. Those three players, like, because I've been seeing a lot. Like, I have a bunch of Debo shares. I have a ton of Slayton shares, and I'm stuck with the Singletary share. And this is Scott from TA5. Like, I was talking with him a lot, me spamming him with offers for Singletary for weeks until the day I saw that Bills article. And then I'm just like, nope, done. Like, so, like, the shift in the way I thought about Singletary happened so quickly that, I mean, I'm glad we were able to talk it out.
Yeah,
but that was the last of the Trade Addicts trades. We have a bunch of listener questions. So do we drop listener questions? Let's do it. You know what? Why not? More drops, the merrier.
Listener questions.
By the way, we've yet to find a guest or co-host when I'm not around to come close to the veracity and the ferociousness of your drops.
I am passionate about this podcast and about
my drops. Those drops are the only way you show it.
Get out of here.
My favorite part of saying dumb shit to Brian is his, like, getting to see his reaction. I'm so glad we do this on video. All right, so we sort of started talking about this, like I said, John, To Drink, and Renshaw, players that could have massive changes in value because of the draft, either new talent coming in or no talent coming in. We just talked about Debo, Singletary, and Slayton. He listed Singletary, Max, Sterling Shepard instead of Slayton, Terry McLaurin, Deontay Johnson. I think Sterling Shepard is who he is, and I think they're good with that. If anything, Golden Tate is still his biggest issue right now. Like, that's still weird that they did that. So I don't think that if they draft someone, they bring in a third person of that kind. So I'm not worried. The only thing to worry about Sterling Shepard is his concussions. Like, to me, that's it. Mm-hmm. Marlon Mack. I really thought they'd grab Melvin Gordon. Like, they have so much money, and they can fix their depth and some of their issues with the draft. So I guess they can't anymore because they traded away their first round pick. And there were rumors at one point that they were talking extensions with Mack. And now I think there's going to be even bigger split between Mack and Hines, because I am absolutely on board this Hines and Phillip Rivers train. Whether I'm blowing it out of proportion or not, I don't care. Like, history of the past 2 years has shown me that this is going to happen. Mack, I forgot who I was talking with, if it was on our show last week, but by virtue of just being on the field, Mack will catch more balls than he did last year because Phillip Rivers is going to dump it off more. Mm-hmm. But by virtue of Phillip Rivers being on the field every play, I think Hines is going to be on the field more than he was last year. Mm-hmm. So I honestly don't know if they do something at running back or if it's worth them for them to do something at running back with enough capital to matter. Anything?
I think there are definitely guys that stick out to me as players whose values would be adjusted. I mean, I'm worried about, so Marlon Mack is one for me that I think if they don't draft another running back, I think his value creeps up again.
Yes.
Just like it did this past season.
Mm-hmm. Right now, running back 27.
I mean, I feel exactly the same way I felt about Marlon Mack this time last year. It was like, well, the Colts are going to draft a running back. And yeah, when they do, Marlon Mack is going to not be relevant anymore. And then they didn't. So, mm-hmm. And then they didn't sign anybody. And then he had a good year. And now the same exact thing has happened so far through free agency. You know, can we get through another draft without them drafting a running back? If we do, then yeah. I mean, I think his value creeps. If and it takes a big hit if they bring somebody in, especially one of the, you know, the upper tier guys.
Yeah.
You know, Edwards-Helaire goes there, and I mean that's max done. In my opinion. So, and look, there are other running backs out there that are like this, right? So Ronald Jones is the same way. He could go either way. They don't, if Tampa Bay, you know, we've been calling for years for Tampa Bay to draft another running back, and they don't, you know, I mean, they drafted Jones. That's who they drafted a couple years ago. Yeah. And, you know, if they don't draft anybody, then Ronald Jones is going to have some real value in that Tom Brady offense, catching the ball out of the backfield and doing some things, even though he's not really.
Don't you dare disrespect Dari Ogunbowale like that. I just wanted to throw that alliteration of the D's out there. That's really the only reason I said that out loud.
I love Dari, man. He had a big game in the Big Ten Championship game in 2016 in Indy, the one that I went to. He had a big game that game. Anyways, Dari could be right. But, I mean, Jones is going to – they're talking Jones up for a reason down there, right? Yeah, hopefully.
For Jones and for J. Mike's sake, I hope so.
And James the Brain, same. Yeah, they love Ronald Jones. I think they're drafting an upper tier running back, and Jones is going to be a nice backup. is what I think is going to happen. But he's another guy that I think is it could go either way. You know, as far as a couple of these receivers, like Deontay Johnson, I don't think Deontay.
Why don't you? Talk to me about the Steelers wide receivers and the running backs, because I think the running backs is a bigger concern than the wide receivers.
Yeah, so James Conner, they will not pay James Conner. I am very confident that they will not pay James Conner. I think they will use James Conner this season and get every drop of production out of him that they can get, but I don't think they sign him long term. And therefore, I believe wholeheartedly that they will select a running back in this draft. Now, they could go a couple different directions here. My preference is for them to use their first pick in the draft, the 49th overall pick, to select, you know, Jonathan Taylor, J.K. Dobbins, maybe even Edwards-Helaire, depending on, you know, what else is on the board. That's my preference. My gut says that they're going to draft a receiver with the second pick, with the second round pick, which I don't like at all. And that they will select somebody like Zach Moss in the fourth round. So
that's a luxury. They love their second, third round wide receivers, but that right now that seems so luxury.
Yeah. Especially, I mean, they only have five picks in this draft, so they've really got to make the most of those picks. So I just hope that they take kind of, you know, BPA, right, for this, because they have some needs on offense, especially. Defense, they're pretty solid. They could use a nose tackle at some point, a defensive tackle at some point in this draft. They can always use corners, even though, I mean, Hayden and oh, my God.
Minka?
No, Minka's the safety. I'm trying to think. Steven Nelson on the other side. I mean, those guys they played very well last year. I mean, that's the best corner tandem we've had in a long time. So the defense, I feel pretty confident about moving into the season. But the offense, I mean, obviously quarterback's a question just because you don't know what you're going to get from Ben. And you're not real comfortable with what you get from who's behind Ben, at least to this point. But yeah, the running back situation, I think James Conner's value definitely in the long term is going to take a hit. I don't know if it just depends on who they bring in. You know, if they bring Zach Moss in, I don't know that they mix him in all that much. You know, a player like that, if they bring J.K. Dobbins in, then I hope they mix him in a lot.
You better workhorse the hell out of that.
Yeah. So, but you know, and then the receivers. So Deontay Johnson, I think absolutely is capable of being the wide receiver two on this team. I mean, Juju is the one for me easily, and is the most talented wide receiver on the roster. But Deontay Johnson did a lot of really nice things last year with some really terrible quarterback play. So I'm excited to see what he can do, but I think he's a legit I think he can be a legit number two. If they draft another guy, you know, I think the receiver you got to worry about for the Steelers is James Washington.
It's an indictment on James Washington if they grab someone.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's a lot of people's wide receiver one that year.
And he showed some flashes. I mean, it just is the consistency week to week. And obviously in practice, there's got to be something too, because, you know, he would have a couple big games, but then he'd kind of just tail off. So
yeah, wouldn't get played the game after.
Right. So, you know, I think if they draft a wide receiver, which I think they will at some point in the draft, I'd like to see them wait, because I think they can get a guy like Tyler Johnson or Isaiah, the kid out of Oregon State. Names with me tonight. Apologies. Yes. I think they can get those guys a little bit later. And I would prefer that. I would prefer they use that first pick on a running back if one of those top tier guys is around. So,
okay. So I want to say Terry McLaurin, I don't think is an issue. I think he will be helped by another wide receiver there. By any influx of talent will be good for Terry McLaurin.
Right.
I want to ask about DJ Chark.
Mm-hmm.
I see a lot of CD Lamb to Jacksonville or Jerry Jeudy to Jacksonville. Should we be worried about DJ Chark? Should I be worried about DJ? I have a lot of DJ Chark at this point. Like, is that I don't know what to think about him or what to do with it. Like, how do you feel about the idea of Jacksonville spending a first round pick on a wide receiver?
Yeah. So here's what I'd say. I think if they do, good for Gardner Minshew.
Yes. Absolutely.
I mean, I obviously. And then the second thing is, I don't think Chark's the alpha there if they draft one of those two. If they draft Lamb or Jeudy, that player's the alpha there. And I think Chark can be a complimentary piece. I don't think he's bad by any means. I think he's, you know, and if they don't draft one, I think he is capable as being a number one wide receiver. But obviously, if they bring in another guy that is, you know, that alpha type that I keep talking about, you know, I mean, CeeDee Lamb goes there. CeeDee Lamb's the one, like the day.
Oh, easy.
Yeah. So, you know, so yeah, I think his value could be affected if they bring in one of those guys.
Yeah. The only thing I could think of is if they do bring in like CeeDee Lamb, maybe they're changing their offense. That's the only thing I could think of. Like, they'll run Fournette into the ground and then not spend money or high draft capital on another running back and turn it into a passing offense. Is that, I mean, I can't say that's what they're doing. I have absolutely no idea, but it seems weird to go and try and replace DJ Chark right now, especially coming off of a good season when, what was it, 2 years ago, you spent a second on him? Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. To me, it was very strange to be seeing all of these things with them taking a wide receiver, but it's consistent, so it's worrying me. Okay, so let's move on from that.
Yep.
Commish McGriff, he made a little joke about the New York Giants backfield, but we'll skip over that for now. Best and worst trades that both of you have made thus far in the non-point scoring season. Also, who is the player you've been trying to acquire that you haven't been able to land? It's really tough to say good or bad trades because nothing's really changed. I mean, there hasn't been all that much value. I mean, maybe like if you went after, like I actually legitimately tried to trade for Mitchell Trubisky after the end of the season. I am glad it did not work out. Clearly, if that had worked out, it would be my worst trade, because clearly that is a drop in value. But to me, not enough has happened to have that big of a value gain or drop. For most people, the draft will create value gains and drops, like we were just talking about, by either being crowded or having their team show faith in them. Players I've been trying to acquire. I mean, I talked about this a few shows ago. I have a trade out to you right now for Joe Mixon, because I don't own any of him. Other than that, I've kind of went out of my way and got a lot of the people I've wanted shares of. I'm completely blanking off the top of my head. I even acquired a Derrick Henry share recently for a team that I'm going all in. I think if you're going all in on this season, you have to own Derrick Henry, because the team's going all in on him by putting him on a 1 year franchise tag. I guess the same really goes for Leonard Fournette. The fact that this is his last year in his contract, there's no guarantees anything anywhere, so they're probably just going to run him into the ground.
How about you? Do you have any trades that stick out in your head that maybe you feel great or terrible about, or any guys that you're actually going after right now?
So the one deal that really sticks out to me that I like, and I don't like it because I gained a crap ton of value in the trade. I just like what it did to my team. So we talked about the trade I made a couple of weeks ago in Trade Addict 6. Actually, I don't think you were on that show that week. So I might not have gotten your reaction to that. But the trade where I acquired Kyler Murray for it was Kyler Murray, Josh Reynolds, and the 113 for Kamara, Rykel Armstead, and the 106. And I really liked that deal for my team because I needed quarterback help bad. And especially now, like I have the 101 in this league, so I'm probably gonna go with a quarterback at that spot. I'm not sure which one yet, but
unless you just sell it to me like I tried before.
Yeah, it could happen. It could happen. But you know, I'm probably gonna go quarterback with that pick. So I went from having Patrick Mahomes, I believe, in that league, right?
No. Gosh. No, that's six. I have Mahomes and Watson in that league. Oh, you have Josh Allen.
Yes, Josh Allen. That's it. He was my only starting quarterback. To did you make
that trade.
What?
Hold on. I'm pulling up leagues. No, I still have Watson and Mahomes. Okay. Yeah, you have Allen, I think.
Yeah.
Go.
Sorry. I think that's right. No, that's okay. But now I'm gonna have three potential starting quarterbacks, which I like a lot. So that's one. I mean, again, value wise, I don't know that I gained a ton of value. I mean, in the Twitter poll, I ended up losing the Twitter poll. I mean, Twitter polls, but, you know, more people like the other side, the side that I gave, but I felt really good about that deal.
It really matters in the long run, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and as far as players I'm trying to acquire, I mean, I'm trying to get some Juju shares back. Just because I think that there's a lot of uncertainty right now and there's people that have soured on him. Really look, dynasty community, right? Super, super reactive. So Juju has a bad year. Even though it was because of injury and horrible quarterback play, and they'll look at Deontay Johnson's numbers and say, oh, Johnson had a great year. Why didn't Juju do that with these quarterbacks? Right. And Juju can't do it without AB and all of these question marks. And that drives his value down. So this is a guy that has produced at a wide receiver one level who maybe you're not paying those prices for. Now, ADP, I believe, still has Juju pretty darn high. He's top. He's like mid second round ADP.
He is wide receiver 8 with an ADP of 30.
Oh, in Superflex.
Superflex.
Okay, I'm not. Yeah, sorry. That's my bad. I wasn't looking Superflex. Yeah, so there you go. I mean, so mid round 3. And I think
even still, wide receiver 8, I would not have guessed it was that high.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, maybe not. I guess.
Should he be? Yes.
I think he should. Yeah.
Would the world still think that after a bad year? Usually they don't.
I don't think they do. So, all right. Well, listen, I wanted to talk. So this next question brings up this is a great question. I'm really excited about this question because I'm in one of these leagues. So if you guys are out there and you're tired of like traditional same old dynasty formats, and if you think you have what it takes to be a real champion, DLF has partnered up with Safe Leagues and commish extraordinaire Scott Fish to create the brand new DLF Champions Cup Series. In the DLF Champions Cup Series, you're matched up in a Superflex tight end premium division with points and payouts awarded each year. The bonus is that every third year, your cumulative points go up against a larger field to see who wins the Champions Cup. Claim a team today and begin your journey to hoist the Champions Cup and claim the $1,000 grand prize. Prove it. Visit safeleaguesfantasy.com/DLF-dynasty-champion-series to sign up today. And I'm really excited about this because I was fortunate enough to get into one of these DLF Champions Cup series leagues. and we had a question about them. So the format in these leagues is very different. It's a super flex league. It's tight end premium, and the tight end premium is actually 2 points per reception.
Ooh.
So it's a major tight end premium. So it's a great format. I was really intrigued when I saw it. And again, this is we talked earlier about trying to survive the non-point scoring season without adding leagues. I saw this come across and it was like, it was just too much to resist. A DLF Scott Fish run partnership league. I couldn't stay away. So we ended up having a question from Andrew at Just Unlucky on Twitter.
Andrew and Just Unlucky. How good of a name is that?
Very good. So his question is, with the new DLF Champions Cup Series leagues, value guys to trade, like how do you value guys and target guys to trade with this particular format? And then he asked about, trading in the startups, and have you found value trading up since people are so desperate trading down? So generally speaking, I mean, we talked on this a little bit earlier in the show about how, typically that has been the case. Russ was just sharing that in his latest startup, he's been able to trade back and he is finding that value. In my particular DLF Champions Cup series, I traded up. So I had the third overall pick. I did. And Patrick Mahomes fell to me, which was awesome. So I got him at 103. And then I ended up trading up to the 108 to grab Michael Thomas. He had fallen all the way to eight. And I went ahead and traded up. I'm trying to look back at what the actual deal was. So I gave up the 210 and my 2021 first for the 108. So I moved up around over 14 spots, and grabbed Michael Thomas with the 108. So I loved that. I thought that was great value. I mean, to only move a future first to move up into, especially. And so here's the deal. If it was the end of the round and I was getting, I got the best wide receiver in the game right now over the next probably 2 to 4 years. So, I loved that. And I think that, yeah, there is value to be had moving up because everybody wants to move back. But I think you have to gauge that based on your league. I mean, you just got to feel the guys out. I mean, if everybody is looking to move back, then yes, there's usually opportunity to jump up and not pay quite as, high of a price that you normally would. Having said that, some leagues, people aren't moving back or they're trying to move up, and it's the same thing there. You just have to look for the value. I think regardless of league format, you have to look for value. In anywhere you can capitalize on a value gain, you have to take that. In this particular league, or this particular format, I think it's absolutely critical to get those elite tier tight ends. I mean, 2 points per reception. You have a guy like George Kittle, Travis Kelce, Zach Ertz, Mark Andrews on your team. I mean, they are going to score so many freaking fantasy points. It's going to be absolutely ridiculous.
I mean, they had to go like mid first round, right? Like early, right?
So I think, Kittle was the first one. He went 107.
Yeah, that's a little later than I thought it would be.
Kelce went 203. And then Andrews was the tight end 3. That's who I took at 303.
Wow, that's great.
So, but, when you look at the tight end scoring in this, so Kelce was the 6th overall scorer. He was behind Christian McCaffrey and Michael Thomas. He was the 3rd highest skill non-quarterback scorer in this league. Those elite tight ends, Kittle was 21st. Darren Waller was 17th in this format last year. So, there's a lot. There's definitely an importance on grabbing one of those elite tight ends early. Now, how early? It depends on what you're comfortable with. You know, I mean, I'm comfortable in these leagues, and I mean, I do this in the Trade Addicts League. We're 1.75, which is still a significant tight end premium. And I've drafted Travis Kelce in multiple Trade Addicts Leagues in the first round. So, you know, it's
you won't trade me first round startup value for him.
You suck, eggnog. But you just have to be confident, you know. Whatever you're comfortable with. If you're not comfortable with that, then don't do it, you know? But I think, in my opinion, I think it's very important. I think quarterbacks, the other thing about these leagues is a quarterback touchdown pass is 6 points. So, you know, I was targeting quarterbacks and tight ends heading into this draft, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then it just so happened that I was able to make a deal to get the best receiver too. And I felt really good about that. But and the other thing that's happening, at least in my league, is that talent over the age of 26 is falling. Everybody's in on rookies early. So like I got Todd Gurley and I told you my first three picks. I got I got Calvin Ridley at 503. I got I should
have been ready for this.
I should have. I did know it was
coming. You knew you were going to read this question.
It's the quarantining's getting to me. I've been blaming on quarantine.
No, you're making excuses. That's all you're doing.
So I went Mahomes, Thomas.
That's so sexy.
303 was Andrews.
Mm-hmm.
410 was Carson Wentz.
Ooh.
503 was Calvin Ridley.
I'm getting sweaty. All right.
And then I got Melvin Gordon at 610 and Todd Gurley at 703.
What?
I mean that's what's happening in this particular draft. A lot of the older, obviously running backs or running backs that have switched teams are getting pushed. I took Justin Jefferson in the next round in the eighth, which was a little bit early probably, but I just have a gut.
I took him in the seventh, if it makes you feel any better.
It does.
It's definitely not a new league.
It does. I love Jefferson. I think he's going to be an animal in the league. So I'm really excited about that.
And especially in a format that you're playing in, where I'm going back to the running backs, where winning matters like right away. Yeah. Like you don't need a team that's going to be good in 5 years.
No. So this is truly, I mean, these leagues are true. So you keep
truly
your
3 year windows,
but they are truly 3 year windows. Yeah. If you want to win the Champions Cup, you got to win in that 3 year window. You can't win once and then win in the fourth year.
Going all in on year one seems to make a lot of sense because you get that push in points. And even if you fall back in that second year, if you can do trade well, draft well into that third year, and you know, come close to winning again, your total points will get you up there.
Right.
So, man, getting Gordon and Gurley is just beautiful. I'm going to live vicariously through your team because I am not part of this. But that is a wonderful start to this draft.
Thanks, man. Yeah. So, there are prizes yearly too. So, like the yearly prizes are 400, 200, and 100. And then the Champions Cup at the end of the 3 years is $1,000. And then the scoring for that is if you win the league, you get 4 points. If you get second place, you get 2 points. Third place is 1 point. Regular season champ is 1 point. And most regular season wins is 1 point.
Interesting.
And then you just collect points over the 3 years, and the person, you know, the people, you know, will basically, if you have more points than anybody else in your series, after those 3 years. So the series are made up of four leagues, basically, North, South, East, and West. They're all 12 teams. So you basically have to have more points than 47 others in that time, but you got to take business. You got to take care of business in your league.
You got to do what's in front of you. Yeah.
Correct. Correct.
Wow. So. That is super interesting. Like, I don't remember which chat it was in because we're in like 16 of them together, but you brought this up and I'm like, what is that? And then you guys just kept talking. No, wait, what are you talking about? And you just keep talking. All right. Everybody shut up. Tell me what you're talking about. Oh wait, that sounds awesome. Yeah, I just started another league. I can't do that.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's I couldn't resist. I mean, obviously, you know, being over at DLF and everything, and involved in the forums and talking with those guys over there and whatnot. And to play in a Scott Fish league too. I mean, obviously the Scott Fish Bowl is what everybody wants to get into, and but Scott is so involved in the safe leagues and you know, and this new champion series format. It's awesome. It's awesome to be a part of, and yeah, I'm excited about it, and I'm excited about my team in my particular series. So we'll see what happens with it. But it, you know, like we said, if you want to check out, you know, go check those out. Go check those, you know, look through the rules and the scoring and how everything works over there. Again, safeleaguesfantasy.com/DLF-dynasty-champion-series and check things out over there. It's a really great format.
Yeah, that was super interesting. I'm glad you were in one of those, because if I had to make that up as I was going along and try to pretend I knew what I was talking about, that would have been awful.
Yeah.
Okay. So we are going to finish.
I'm so excited about this.
We are going to finish this show up with two listener questions, and they are both in mine and Brian's wheelhouse because they are food related.
Food.
First one, @_JamesTheBrain. He wants to know, I want to know what side dish you guys prefer with your meatloaf. Also, what side dish you guys prefer with your Wildcat. So, Brian, what side dishes do you prefer with yourself?
Okay, so I'm not the I mean, with myself, I don't eat. I'm not even going with that. I'm going to talk about meatloaf.
Let's talk about meatloaf.
Okay. So first of all, just for I don't know, for people who don't understand how this whole thing with Meatloaf Wildcat developed, so that people don't think I'm like insane or something. So James and I were having a conversation on the Superflex Super Show, and John and James and I were on, and James, during the introductions, introduces himself as Orange Elk. And I'm like, what? Like, what are you talking about? So it ended up being like, you know, so we have all these games that everybody's playing online, right? The ones where you're giving away your bank account passwords and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Don't do that, people. I mean, come on. But anyways, there's all these games. So one of them, apparently, was Quarantine Names. And I said, well, how do you come up with a quarantine name? And James had seen this, and it was The Last Thing You Ate and Your High School Mascot.
Mm-hmm.
Last thing I ate was meatloaf. My high school mascot's Wildcat. And it was just, it was very organic, and it was hilarious. We all laughed about it quite a bit. So anyways, so that's the nickname thing that, so whatever, we're rolling with it. But to be serious here, there is a correct answer here when it comes to side dishes for meatloaf. Okay, so there's a couple things. Meatloaf in my family is absolutely a tradition, and it is absolutely a delicacy, and it is absolutely one of the best meals. Like, when my wife says, hey, I'm making meatloaf this weekend, or my mom says, hey, I'm making meatloaf this weekend, because they use the same recipe and same side dishes, mm-hmm. I get really excited. I love it. It's one of my favorite meals. So, meatloaf,
mm-hmm.
scalloped potatoes.
Ooh.
Boxed ones are okay. Homemade are much better.
Oh, I have no energy for that, but okay.
Green beans.
Ooh.
Coleslaw.
Lost me on the coleslaw.
And occasionally pineapple chunks. Not on, but just as a side.
I have put green beans in my meatloaf. I usually put vegetables in my meatloaf so my kids don't notice it and eat vegetables. Nice. Like, there is always usually peas and onions, at least. But I have gone bigger. I've gone green beans and always cheese. My two side dishes for meatloaf, if I'm feeling super lazy, is just white rice. But the real answer and the best answer is mac and cheese. Like, to me, that is the real answer. Mac and cheese on the side of meatloaf. That's how you do it.
Is that how they served it in high school?
I don't know.
I'm just kidding, dude. You're wrong, but I mean, that is probably a more standard side. I can't say correct because look, here's so the staples of the meal. Like literally, if my wife makes the meal without scalloped potatoes and green beans, I'm probably going to say something. I'm probably going to get my ass kicked too, but I'm probably going to say something to her. Like, well, where's the scalloped potatoes?
Make your own damn potatoes.
Yeah, yeah, and it's happened. It's happened, and rightfully so. But
rightfully so. Sure.
Yeah, rightfully so. But yes, that is the answer: scalloped potatoes and green beans for me. But I mean, mac and cheese is good too.
I don't know how adventurous you get with your meatloafs or if you ever have actually cooked yourself. Putting stovetop stuffing.
Yes. Holds it together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Instead of breadcrumbs.
Yep.
It's awesome.
Yep. Yep.
When I ate copious amounts of carbs, I used to do that. Now you do like even less than half the amount of breadcrumbs. Almond flour is what I use.
Interesting. I might have to give that a
really
shot.
Taste it. It holds it together. Nice. Works just the same.
Nice. Nice.
All right. On to the next.
Yeah.
At Devi_Kane. And this he literally also, just said the word.
This is also very important.
Yeah. He literally just said the word hot dogs. Because
mm-hmm.
I said, what should we talk about? He said hot dogs.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you like to talk about hot dogs?
So I like hot dogs. I don't eat them nearly as much as well, I
with
used
your daughter
to.
Having to watch her sodium. Yeah, I understand.
Yeah. My daughter having to watch her sodium. It's me, folks, that has to watch the sodium. But but I love on the grill. I mean, black, not like full black, but like you got to get the crispy. They got to be kind of you got to have that black like crisp on them. Definitely with the grill marks. And I love hot dogs. Better yet, butterfly them on the grill. Like split them in half and then, yeah. And I'm a ketchup guy. It depends. See, now the 4th of July, I'll do ketchup, mustard, and relish. But if I'm just cooking them like at home, like regular during a year or something, then I'll just use ketchup usually.
Yeah, if...
Heinz I don't ketchup.
Like, only. That is the only ketchup.
Yes.
If I don't like them as cooked as you do, but... Absolutely, there needs to be some charring on there. If I'm only putting one thing on there, it's going to be ketchup. And I think that's going to get us yelled at because for some reason people think ketchup doesn't belong on hot dogs and they're just
wrong,
grumpy. but I have known to just go nuts on hot dogs, like ketchup, mustard, sauerkraut, chili, beans, onions. Like to me, hot dogs is the kind of food you pile stuff on. So I'm all about that. I am not a food snob and I don't food shame people. You want to put pineapple on your pizza? That's fine. My wife loves it. Every once in a while, I'll eat it. That's fine. I don't crave it any way, shape or form, but it's good. So like if you're going to come at us yelling us about ketchup on your hot dogs, just save it for someone who actually wants to listen to you. but yeah, to me, hot dogs is like the ultimate whatever the hell you want. Like there's a place in New Brunswick, at least there used to be. I don't know if it's still there, called Destination Dogs. And it was wonderful because it was, I almost said hundreds, which clearly it's not hundreds, but there was like 20, 30 different kinds of hot dogs, all of them different meat. There was lamb, boar, alligator, like, and then just anything you could imagine that could be put on top of it. It was like, I went there so many times just because there's so many things you could do.
Mm-hmm.
So like to me, hot dog is the ultimate, whatever the hell you feel like at the moment, dropping it on top of a sausage shaped meat. Go for it.
Nice. Yeah. No, I like chili dogs and stuff too, like chili cheese dogs and different things as well. I don't typically make those here. Like when we're doing hot dogs, we just grill them up and throw some ketchup on or ketchup and mustard or whatever. But like if I'm out and I order a hot dog, which doesn't happen often, but if I do, I'll do the chili thing, chili and cheese or something like that. Are you okay? So here's another question, just random. Are you with Philly cheesesteaks?
Mm-hmm.
Ever had a real one? Like, mm-hmm. Okay, that basically means
with.
Okay. You're a with guy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm whiz as well, but I'm without.
Like here in New Jersey, usually it's peppers and onions with it and provolone.
Okay.
So that's what I'm used to. Mm. Like that's how we eat cheesesteaks here. But yeah, absolutely onions and absolutely Wiz.
I don't do onions at all, so that explains that part.
Yeah, see, it's funny. I was never a picky eater, but there's a lot of stuff I didn't eat. What I do is, like, every year, I try stuff I thought I hated. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you just find out you don't hate things.
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. Mustard, onions, mushrooms, tomatoes. Like, all of these things have recently, in the past couple of years, I'm just like, oh, wait, I don't hate this anymore. Guacamole, mayo. Like, all of these, like, and the thing is, mayo, mustard, some type of onion is in almost everything you eat. You just don't know it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. All right, cool. Well, that's good. I wanted to check on the cheesesteaks. I'm a Pats guy, too. So
always down to talk about cheesesteaks. I don't care. I just like cheesesteaks.
Yeah.
I do not need loyalty. I'll double fist it. I'll go to one, then run the other.
I really will, too. So,
all right. But on that note,
yeah,
that is the end of our show sheets. That is the end of our show. And we started late, so it is late.
Late.
Late. FFPodShirts.StoreEnvy.com. My Casey Kasem shirt came in, and I am freaking thrilled with how awesome it looks.
Yeah, that's still a great baller. Shirt. That is a great shirt. Yep.
It really just happened because Casey was like, man, I wish I had a shirt that Russ could go buy. And I'm like, all right. And then one day I'm like, hey, Casey, I made you a shirt. She's like, what the hell are you talking about? I'm like, remember this time like 4 weeks ago you said this? She's like, no. And I'm like, I do. So yeah, ffpodshirts.storeenvy.com. You can get Trade Addict, Superflex Super Show, Top Shelf DFF, Coast to Coast Scouting, who we're going to have Andrew Harbaugh on next week leading up to the draft. Dynasty Diagnostic, and now Casey's shirt. All of that awesome, awesome stuff. 10% of every sale goes to Fantasy Cares. Speaking of buying stuff and getting money that goes to Fantasy Cares, our awesome wristbands.
Yes.
Throw that up on the screen. Neon, green, navy blue, $5 per wristband. $2 of those five goes to Fantasy Cares as well. If you want one of those, DM me, DM Brian, Dynasty Outhouse, Brian RFF. Mailing them out might be a little bit of a challenge right now, but we promise we will get them to you. Mm-hmm. And Brian will draw you a couple of extra pictures of lamps. People. And if you are a patron,
yes,
patreon.com/tradeaddictspod, you can see the picture of the lamp Brian is holding up to the screen right now and how beautiful it is. And you will get one of those with your mail of the wristbands. That is all. I never remember to plug FF Mercs. I should probably keep doing that. Any part of your fantasy season, team, any kind of league you're in, you want some help, ffmercs.com, at ffmercs on Twitter. Consultations, me, Stompy, Shane Manila, Kane. Asked a question. He's there for the Devi stuff. Caleb, his co-host for the Devi Marketplace. Bunch of people there. We all just want to help you out with your league so you could win. Check them out. Check us out. All of the above. Night, Brian?
Night, Outhouse.
Yeah, I'm out of here. If I could find the button. There it is.
Thank you for listening to the Trade Addict Podcast. Please remember, follow our hosts at Dynasty Outhouse and at Brian RFF. Follow the pod at Trade Addict Pod. Please review, subscribe, and rate the podcast. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.